Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to In the Studio with Linus here on the Essence of Success Radio Network. I'm so glad that you're joining us this evening on this day, September 13th, 2017, and we're still here up and running and doing good. We made it through the fires, y'all. Yeah. You know, we had them pretty bad up here, too, for 2 weeks. It was just so overcast, cloudy. I mean, now we can actually see a color called blue, which is kind of nice, my favorite color. But anyway, we can now see the sky and the clouds. We actually got a little rain, and we haven't had rain in a long time up here. So anyway, we're thankful for the weather that we have. Thank you, God. So carrying on. Well, welcome to In the Studio with Linus, a weekly entertainment information show. We come on at 6 p.m. every Wednesday. You can call into the show and give a shout-out for a special person or an upcoming event in your life. The chat room is always open for discussions. Discussions weekly will center around also hot topics, but politics, NFL, weather changes, which is what we're going to be talking about, these hurricanes, what new music just got released, most entertainment news around television or movies and cable shows, updates on performers, singers, actors, and sports figures. If there is a subject that you would like to see discussed, well, please contact me at my website, www.theessenceofsuccess.com. That's www.theessenceofsuccess.com. And thank you, everyone, from around the world, on the nation. I tell you, are on the phone in the chat room. I'm grateful for all y'all showing up. Thank you so very much. Also, I would like to say from not only me, but the staff of the Essence of Success Radio Network, we are still praying for all you folks and that have just got through Harvey in Texas, hurricane. Also in Mexico, you just endured 8 on the Richter scale earthquake, which is a good one. I mean, not good and bad, but it's bad, really. But it's just that's high up on the scale. And our prayers definitely go out to all those families and people involved and the first responders. We understand last time we looked, it was like maybe about 83 deaths. So, my God, our prayers are definitely with you. And also Hurricane Latia that came into your coastline, the people that are still recovering from there. And then as we go across to the East Coast, Florida, that just got through a weekend of Irma. And thank God she kind of slowed down. She was coming in at full force at 5 and getting ready to go to a 6, but she kind of simmered down a little bit. So I assume their prayers were answered around the world and across the nation. And we're also praying for those people as they recover, as they make their way back home through the traffic. And also hopefully you're able to get food and water without anybody gouging you for prices. But we'll be compassionate to the people that have just went through this and had to leave their home and at least give them food and water, okay? I mean, I think, didn't Jesus do that? But anyway. Okay, so anyway, our prayers go out to them. And we're thankful on Action One Network and Tampa Bay FM, Mr. David Capers. He made it through okay, did fine. He's also my boss that I do the NFL and the collegiate show with. Out of Sarasota, and also his compadre and producer, Mr. Sam Foster. We're so glad that you and your family survived this too and are doing well also. So with that, and and the folks in the Caribbean, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. Our prayers definitely started with y'all first, with all those St. Thomas, St. Martin, St. Meriton, really got hit bad. So, yes, our prayers, and I can't think it was a St. Martin. One of the islands was like 90% damage. That's pretty bad. I think it must have been a 4 when it got to the Caribbean, and it eased up to a 5 by the time it got to Cuba and coming into Florida. But, yes, our prayers definitely go out to you, too, and I can tell you God is good, and we walk by faith, not by sight. And I appreciate all the countries, Dutch, France, England, as well as America, are all over there providing relief help for the folks in the Caribbean islands. So we thank you for that. Okay, so today on In the Studio, we're going to talk about the death tolls. It's up to 8 in Florida so far at this nursing home. We're also going to talk about the student or high school killing, student killing, a high school in Washington State, and a Q&A with Bill Riley. And after that, if we have time, we'll talk a little bit about the looting that's going on in the Caribbean. Okay. So right now it's, let's see, let me give you the time. Right now it is 6:07. On the West Coast, and it's about 9:07 on the East Coast. And again, I thank you for joining me here on In the Studio with Linus. Okay, so the death toll is at 8, y'all, at that Florida nursing home where Irma knocked out the power. 8 patients at a Florida nursing home who spent days in a sweltering heat died after Hurricane Irma knocked out their air conditioning. Fire rescue crews and police responded to the rehabilitation center at Hollywood Hills in Hollywood, Florida, early Wednesday morning after receiving calls for patients in distress. Hollywood Police Chief Thomas Sanchez said at a press conference that officers found extremely hot temperatures on the second floor. First responders ordered the nursing home evacuated immediately. The nursing home has been without air conditioning since Irma knocked out electricity to the area. God, I bet the humidity was awful in there, y'all. 3 patients died at the nursing home, and 3 others died Wednesday morning shortly after being transported to local hospitals. The Broward County Medical Examiner announced the deaths of 2 more patients Wednesday afternoon. The 8 victims range in age from 71 years to 99 years old. The evacuation included 115 patients from the nursing home and 18 from a nearby behavioral facility. The patients were transported to area hospitals, including Memorial Regional Hospital across the street. Florida Governor Rick Scott said He was absolutely heartbroken over the deaths, calling the situation unfathomable. Scott said he was directing state agencies to work with local law enforcement to investigate the incident. If they find that anyone wasn't acting in the best interest of the patients, we will hold them accountable to the fullest extent of the law, quote unquote. Area footage showed patients sitting outside in wheelchairs and others being taken out of the facility on stretchers. Dr. Randy Katz, the medical director of Memorial Emergency Department, said at least a dozen patients remain in the emergency room. Most of the patients have been treated to respiratory distress, dehydration, heat-related issues, Katz said. Sanchez said police have opened a criminal investigation into the death. Sanchez said that officers and fire crews responded Wednesday morning to call from the facility about some patients in need of critical care. Police officers are conducting welfare checks at 42 other nursing homes and assisted living facilities across Hollywood. Josh Levy, the mayor of Hollywood, said he urged mayors and county commissioners across the state to urge residents to check out elderly neighbors in their communities. He said 32,000 homes and businesses in Hollywood were still without power. At least 25 people died with Irma pounding the southeast earlier this week, including 12 people in Florida. Residents struggling to put their lives back together have fallen victim to new hazards, including oppressive heat, brush clearing accidents, house fires, and deadly fumes from generators. One person was found dead and three others were taken to the hospital for carbon monoxide poisoning in Daytona Beach caused by fumes from a gas generator. Power outages continue to plague the state, with 4.4 million customers still without power as of Wednesday morning today. According to the Florida Division of Emergency Management, more than 21,000 people remain still in shelters across the state. In the Miami area, a Coral Gables apartment building was evacuated after authorities determined a lack of power made it unsafe for elderly tenants while officers arrived at the huge Century Village retirement community in Pembroke Pines upper floors without access to working elevators. More than half the community of 15,000 residents lacked power. Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break and we will be right back.
I know it's late. No.
I'll Take You There by the Staple Singers. Thank you. Welcome back. You're listening to In the Studio with Linus here on the Essence of Success Radio Network. The time right now is about 6:16 on the West Coast and 9:16 on the East Coast. I hope you're enjoying the show, whether you're listening around the world, in the chat room, or on the phone. Thank you so much for joining. So today we're going to be talking about we're going to the story about the school shooting in Washington State. And you know what? I was going to go to Bill Riley after that, but I think I'll do a little bit of news of the weird. I haven't done that in quite a while. You know, that's always fun. That has you guys cracking up. Okay, student killed confronting shooter at high school in Rockford, Washington State. A student who opened fire in a hallway at a Washington State high school. Yeah, another high school shooting, huh? At a high school, a classmate who confronted him Wednesday and wounded three others before being stopped by staff members, authorities said. The suspect, whose classmate described as being obsessed with previous school shootings, was taken into custody. The wounded victims were expected to survive, officials said. The shooter bought two weapons to Freeman High School in Rockford, south of Spokane, Washington, but the first one he tried to fire jammed. This is a report from the Spokane County Sheriff Ozzie Kenovich. He went to his next weapon, Kenovich said. A student walked up to him, engaged him, and that student was shot. That student did not survive. The sheriff said the shooter fired more rounds down the hallway, striking the other students before a school staffer could stop him. Chesnovich called it a courageous act that prevented further bloodshed. Elisa Vigil, a 14-year-old freshman, told the API that she saw one male student shot in the hand, who janitors covered with a cloth, and another female student wounded in the back. Michael Harper, a 15-year-old sophomore, said the suspect had brought notes in the beginning of the school year saying he was going to do something stupid and might get killed or jailed. Some students alerted counselors, thank you, the teen said, but it wasn't clear what school officials did in response to this. Well, my God, school ain't been back but a couple of weeks. Give me a break. What could be so, that child had problems, okay, y'all? A call to the school was not immediately returned, so later Harper said the shooter had many friends and was not bullied, calling him nice and funny and weird, and a huge fan of the TV show Breaking Bad. He also said the suspect was obsessed with other school shootings. The boy had problems, y'all. Students said the shooter was armed with a pistol and rifle and had carried a duffel bag to school that today. After shots were fired, students went running and screaming down the hallways, Harper said. Authorities didn't release the suspect's identity or a possible motive. The victims also were not named. Louis Prieto, assistant football coach at Freeman High, called the shootings devastating. You think? Yeah. A vigil was planned tonight at a nearby church. This is a real close-knit community, he said. Tulane Road into the town of about 500 people near the Idaho border was clogged as worried parents sped to the school. Some people abandoned their cars on the street to make it to their children. Cheryl Moser said her son, a freshman, called her from a classroom after hearing shots fired. He called me and said, Mom, there are gunshots. He sounded so scared. I've never heard him like that. Moser said, you never think about something happening like this at a small school. Providence Sacred Heart Medical Center and Children's Hospital received three pediatric patients. They were in stable condition and surrounded by family, she said. Stephanie Lugit told AP she was relieved to hear her son was safe after his high school near Freeman High was put on lockdown. She commended the school districts for its communication. It's been amazing. Within probably 15 to 20 minutes of hearing about it, I'd already received a phone call. I'd already received a text message saying that the school is okay, she said. She's still worried for others she knew, including a coworker who had yet to hear from her son, a sophomore at Freeman. My stomach's in knots right now, she said. Governor Jay Inslee said in a statement that all Washington are thinking of the victims and their families, and are grateful for the service of school staff and first responders working to keep our students safe. Okay, we're going to take another little break, and we'll be right back. Don't you go nowhere. Thank you. Mr. Marvin Gaye, thank you very much. You can never go wrong with Marvin. Okay, welcome back. You're listening to In the Studio with Linus here on the Essence of Success Radio Network. The phone number to the show is 646-727-2914. That's 646-727-2914. The time right now is about 6:30 on the West Coast and 9:30 on the East Coast. Okay, well, we're going to do a few little stories from News of the Weird. You know y'all love it. Okay. So the first story, the People's Liberation Army Daily, a Chinese state-run military newspaper, has delivered on its WeChat account that fewer Chinese youth are passing fitness tests, y'all, to join the army, because they're too fat and they masturbate too damn much, resulting in abnormally large testicular veins. The web article cited One Town statistics where 56.9% candidates were rejected for failing to meet physical requirements. China's military quickly beat down the article's assertion, saying the quality of our recruits is guaranteed and the headwaters of our military will flow long and strong. The entrepreneurial spirit. Police in Osnabrück, Germany, stopped a vehicle on August 19th and found an unusual trove of drugs inside. Plastic bags filled with 5,000 ecstasy pills with a street value of about $46,000, all in the shape of Donald Trump's head. The orange tablets depicted Trump's signature sweep of hair and his rosebud mouth. An unnamed 51-year-old man and his son, 17, also had a large sum of cash and were taken into custody. That's funny. Cultural diversity. The Japanese funeral industry demonstrated its forward thinking on August 23rd when practitioners gathered for the Life-Ending Industry Expo in Tokyo. Among the displays was a humanoid robot named Pepper, who can conduct a Buddhist funeral, complete with chanting and tapping a drum. Pepper is a collaboration between SoftBank and Nisei Echo Company, which wrote the chanting software. Michio Inamuro and Nisi's executive advisor said the robot could step in when priests are not able to. Watch out for that. They'll be replacing you humans, period. Also at the Life-Ending Industry Expo in Tokyo, four undertakers competed on stage as funeral music played to see who could best display the ancient skills of rituality dressing the dead. The Shinto religion in Japan believes that the dead are impure just after death and that dressing the body purifies the spirit. The contestants dressed live human volunteers and were observed by three judges. Rhino, who won the contest, said, "I practice every day to prepare for this competition." Okay. In Iran, the education department has banned people who are considered ugly from being teachers. The list of conditions and features that prevent one from being a teacher includes facial moles, acne, eczema, scars, and crossed eyes. Also on the list of unsavory conditions are cancer, bladder stones, or color blindness, none of which can be observed by others. Think about that one. Fanatic. Jeffrey Regal, 56, of Port Republic, New Jersey, left him laughing with his obituary parting shot at the Philadelphia Eagles. In it, Regal asked the eight Eagle players act as pallbearers so the Eagles can let me down one last time. Regal owned season tickets for 30 years, during which the Eagles never won a Super Bowl. Oh my, that's funny. Okay, inexplicable. And Arkansas. An Arkansas Highway Patrol officer spotted an unusual sight on August 23rd on I-30. A black Hummer, ooh, and I love a Hummer, with a casket strapped on top of it. When the officer pulled over Kevin M. Chalosky, 39, of Van Buren, Arkansas, he took off and led police on a chase along I-30, where his vehicle was eventually stopped by road spikes. Although the casket was empty, Chalosky was charged in Pulaski County with fictitious tags, reckless driving, and fleeing. Well, that don't even make sense. Why did he have the casket to begin with? That's strange. Latest religious messages. Sonogram photos are notoriously difficult to decipher, but one couple in Franklin County, Pennsylvania, are sure theirs shows a man watching over their unborn daughter. When they gave it to us, to me it's Jesus, and it looks like Jesus, said Mom Alicia Zeke. She and Father Zach Smith have two older children, both born with birth defects, and the image is putting them at ease about their third child. Once we looked at the picture, I was like, look, babe, we have nothing to worry about. Okay, girlfriend. Least competent criminals. Okay, Josanne Feliciano Rosado, 22, was driving a stolen car on Monday, August 21st, when he dropped off at a Harbor Freight store in Kissimmee, Florida, to pick up a welder's helmet for viewing the solar eclipse. As he dawdled next to the vehicle, looking up at the sun with his helmet on, members of the Orange County Sheriff's Office Auto Theft Unit interrupted his reverie and arrested him. He stole a car, you dumb so-and-so. Adam Darrell, 29, of Little Rock, Arkansas, tried to elude officers who had arrived at his girlfriend's house to arrest him by climbing out a back window. But when that didn't work, he hid in her attic. Meanwhile, Enrique Hill, 20, held police at bay outside her home. Things went south for Darrell when he fell through the attic floor, and Little Rock police officers arrested him for a number of felonies, including hindering arrest. Bright ideas. Tuffy Tuffington. Boy, that's a heck of a name, huh? Tuffy Tuffington, 45, of San Francisco, was walking his dogs, Bob and Chuck, when he came up with a way to respond nonviolently to a right-wing rally at Chrissy Field on August 26. So he launched a Facebook page asking San Franciscans to bring a dog poop to spread in the park in advance of the event. It seemed like a little bit of a civil disobedience where we didn't have to engage with them face-to-face, Tuffington said. Contributors to the project also plan to show up on August 27 to clean up the mess and hug each other. Court report. Jordan Willis, 22, of Dover, England, provoked the ire of Judge Simon James of the Canterbury Crown Court in Kent when he appeared before the court. Wills called the judge a prick, and when James asked him to refrain from using obscene language, Willis said, "Who are you to tell me what to do?" James replied, "Well, I am the judge, and I need to make it clear to you and others that such behavior is not going to be tolerated." Willis was found in contempt of court and sentenced to 2 weeks in jail. Yeah, cold heart. A police officer on maternity leave was ticketed and fined £110 after she pulled her car into a bus stop in West London to help her newborn baby, who was choking in the back seat. Rebecca Moore, 31, of Isbury, said her son Riley was going a deep shade of red in the face. His eyes were bulging and watering, and he was trying to cough but was struggling. Moore appealed the fine, but the Herald Council rejected her appeal, as did the London tribunals. The law about stopping in bus stops is exactly the same everywhere in London, a council spokeswoman said. You can't do it. So what was she supposed to do, asshole? Let her child die? Remind me never to drive in London, okay? News that sounds like a joke. Well, one reveler at an August 19th street festival in Worcester, Massachusetts, caused a dust-up when he aggressively confronted a police horse. Now, Donald Pagan, 59, was cutting through a column of mounted police when an officer asked him to stop. Instead, Pagan raised his fist in an attempt to punch the horse in the face. A police statement said, the horse jumped backwards away from Pagan. When officers noted could have injured Pagan, the horse, or the mounted officer, Pagan was charged with assault and battery on a police officer, resisting arrest and interfering with the police horse. Social media to the rescue. Last story in News of the Weird. Epping, New Hampshire resident Leslie Kahn, 61, found herself trapped in her swimming pool on August 11th after the ladder broke. She was not strong enough to pull herself out of the pool, so she used a pool pole to drag a nearby chair with her iPad on it closer. On a community Facebook page, Kahn posted her desperate situation under the heading 9/11, and soon police and neighbors showed up to rescue her. Oh, wasn't that nice? Okay, so that ends News of the Weird. Okay, we're going to go back and take another little short break, and we'll be right back. Don't go nowhere.
You don't know my kind.
That was Michael McDonald from the Doobie Brothers Band, Taking It to the Street. Thank you, Michael. Okay, now, come on, Bill Riley, you have to just bear with me. You know, we bear with you. I have to report on our girl Hillary, okay? You know her book just dropped, and she's going around the country right now touring. The title of the book is called What Happened by Hillary Rodham Clinton. Well, you guys got to check it out. I know I'm going to buy a copy because I want to read it and see what she has to say. Well, anyway, what I'm going to talk about right now is 28 things we learned from Hillary Clinton's new campaign. But first, I want to say welcome back to In the Studio with Linus here on the Essence of Success Radio Network. The time right now is 6:45 on the West Coast, and it's 9:45. On the East Coast. Okay, well, let's just run through right quick 28 things that we learned from Hillary Clinton's new campaign memoir. Okay. First thing, sorry. Mean to do that. I was trying to stop something. Terrible. I want to read this article, and they're showing a bloody commercial like I care. Oh, boy. Okay, here we go, folks. So the first thing up is remember that famous photo of Bill and Hillary at Trump's wedding? She says that they weren't close at all with Donald and Melania and assumed they were only invited to increase the wedding's star power. They only went, she said, because they happened to be in the area anyway. Number two, those clear ponchos everyone wore at Trump's inauguration were originally white. Until one staffer realized that from a distance, they all look like KKK hoods. Yeah, uh-huh. Number three, after the election, Hillary was often approached by strangers who apologized for not doing enough to help her win. Even more mortifying, some parents forced their adult children to apologize to her for not voting. She writes that she didn't know how to handle these interactions. These people were looking for absolution. I just couldn't give. Number four, Hillary's post-election depression outfit, yoga pants and a fleece. Number five, her post-election pop culture, Friday Night Lights, Gilmore Girls, and the Hamilton cast album. The Good Wife, Madam Secretary, Blue Bloods, and NCIS Los Angeles. Which Bill insists is the best of the bunch. Number six, she did not anticipate her post-State Department speaking engagement becoming such a big deal. I like that there was a way for me to earn a very good living without working for any one company or sitting on any board, she writes. Many of the organizations wanted the speeches to be private, and I respected that. They were paying for a unique experience that allowed me to be candid about my impressions of world leaders who might have offended if they heard. Still, she writes, she should have thought more about how these speeches would look to voters. When you know why you're doing something and you know there's nothing more to it and certainly nothing sinister, it's easy to assume that others will see it the same way. That was a mistake. Especially after the financial crisis of 2008 to 2009, I should have realized it would be bad optics and stayed away from having anything to do with Wall Street. I didn't. That's on me. Number 07, Obama pushed her to run for president. He made it clear that he believed that I was our party's best chance to hold the White House and keep our progress going, and he wanted me to move quickly to prepare to run, she writes. Clinton said she finally decided to go for it after a visit to Oscar de la Renta's house in the fall of 2014. The designer died in October of that year. Number eight, even on the campaign trail, Hillary tried to spend as many nights at her own house as possible. A typical breakfast, scrambled egg, whites with vegetables. When they're around, I add fresh jalapenos. Otherwise, it's salsa and hot sauce. Number nine, she tries to work out every day, but she says she's no match for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who pumps iron and does planks and push-ups 2 days a week. Number 10, she found her favorite makeup artist after an oh honey moment from Anna Wintour, who saw me at an event and knew I needed help. According to her own math, Clinton spent 600 hours or 25 days on the campaign trail getting her makeup done. I've never gotten used to how much effort it takes just to be a woman in the public's eye, she writes. Number 12, her favorite hot sauce, Ninja Squirrel Sriracha and Marie Sharp's, especially the red habanero pepper flavor. 13, she's ambivalent about selfies. To be clear, if you see me in the world and want a selfie and I'm not on the phone or racing to get somewhere, I'll be glad to take one with you, she writes. But I think selfies come at a cost. Let's talk instead. That feels real to me. A selfie is so impersonal, although it does give you your wrist a break from autographs, now obsolete. Number 14, she vehemently denies the suggestion that she spent too much time fundraising from wealthy donors. Until the day comes that campaign finance reform is signed into law and upheld by the Supreme Court, if you want to run a viable national campaign, there's no way around it. You're going to have to do some serious fundraising online, by phone, by mail, and in person, she says. I reject the idea that it's impossible to do it while maintaining your integrity and independence. 15, she says she can't quite understand with why so many people dislike her so intensely. When it comes to some of my most controversial actions, like my vote giving President Bush the authority to go to war in Iraq, I was far from alone, she writes. That doesn't make it right, but it also doesn't explain the venom targeted at me specifically. Why am I seen as such a divisive figure and say Joe Biden and John Kerry aren't? They've run for president. They've served at high levels of government. They've cast votes of all kinds, including some they regret, just like me. What makes me such a lightning rod for fury? I'm really asking. I'm at a loss. She's not really at a loss. She later ascribes much of the hatred to sexism. 16, she went so far to hire a linguistic expert to advise her on the right way to talk on the stump as a woman. He said, I needed to focus on my deep breathing and try to keep something happy and peaceful when I went on stage, she recalls. That way, when the crowd got energized and started shouting, as crowds and rallies tend to do, I could resist doing the normal thing, which is to shout back. Men get to shout back to their heart's content, but not women. Okay, I told this expert, I'm game to try, but out of curiosity, can you give me an example of a woman in public life who has pulled this off successfully, who has met the energy of a crowd while keeping her voice soft and low? He could not. Fool. 17, Trump supporters made her feel like Cersei Lannister. Now, if y'all don't know who Cersei Lannister is, you got to watch the Game of Thrones. That's a cold-ass heifer. Crowds at Trump rallies called for my imprisonment more times than I can count. They shouted, guilty, guilty, like the religious zealots in Game of Thrones, shouting, shame, shame, at Cersei Lannister as she did the walk back to the Red Keep. Excuse me. Yeah, but she did the walk of shame, too, because as she walked through the crowd, they threw piss, boo-boo, everything on her naked body. Yeah, Cersei had to walk through the crowd naked. After that, she was never the same. She's ruthless now. Okay, 18, she's been pen pals with one of her favorite mystery authors. She doesn't name them, so start taking guesses now. Still, she writes, it's hard for her and Bill to make new friends. Do we let people into our lives who we don't know very well? What if they wanted to get to know us in order to have a good story to tell? We've been burned by people who've done just that. It's not fun to feel used. It sure isn't, Hillary. I don't care who you are. 19, Susan Sarandon gets a thinly veiled shout out. Making the perfect enemy of the good is short-sighted and counterproductive. And when someone on the left starts talking about how there's no difference between the two parties, or that electing a right-wing Republican might somehow hasten the revolution, it's just unfathomably wrong. 20. She thought about shaking some sense into Matt Lauer after he spent an entire debate asking her about her emails, but she didn't. Here's another example where I remain polite, albeit aspirated, and played the political game as it used to be, not as it had become. 21. Though Clinton is proud of the campaign she ran and disputes the idea that she ran a candidate of the status quo, she admits she didn't quite stir enough excitement. I do recognize that my campaign in 2016 lacked the sense of urgency and passion that I remember from 92. In 2016, we were seeking to build on 8 years of progress for a change, hungry electorate. It was a harder sale. 22, she admits that the basket of deplorables comment was a mistake, but stands by her reasoning, citing a survey where 55% of white Republicans believe most black people don't have the motivation or willpower to pull themselves up out of poverty. 23, at one point, Clinton says she felt like Ray Donovan, though she's referring to the former labor secretary, not the hero of the hit show drama. I was going to say, ooh. 24, after the pivotal commie letter, which was spurred by emails found on Anthony Weiner's computer, Huma Abedin burst into tears and said, "This man is going to be the death of me." 25, among his other crimes, Vladimir Putin is a man spreader. When I sat with Putin in meetings, Clinton recalls, he looked more like one of the guys on the subway who imperiously spread their legs wide, encroaching on everyone else's space, as to say, "I take what I want, and I have so little respect for you that I'm going to act as if I'm lounging at home in my bathrobe." Ooh. 26, after the election, Hillary almost went full conspiracy corkboard over the Russian story. To keep it all straight, I started making lists of everything we knew about the unfolding scandal. At times, I felt like the CIA agent Kerry Matheson on the TV show Homeland desperately was trying to get her arms around a sinister conspiracy and appearing more than a little fanatic or frantic in the process. 27, her concession call to Trump was short. It was all perfectly nice and weirdly ordinary, like calling a neighbor to say you can't make it to his barbecue. 28, she sparred with her speechwriters over her concession speech. Their first draft was combative, while Clinton preferred a conciliatory tone. They finally landed on a compromise, shorter and more gracious, but not sugar-coated. And that tells you a little bit about Hillary's book, so I'm telling you, I'll be buying it. But anyway, it's called What Happened by Hillary Rodham Clinton. Bill O'Reilly, I'm sorry we didn't get to you today. It'll have to be another time, another show. Oh, well, things happen. What can I say? Okay, so thank you so much for joining me today on The Essence in the Studio with Linus here on The Essence of Success Radio Network. Whether you join me around the world on the phone or in the chat room, thank you so much for being here today. Now, do join me on Friday at 6 o'clock for Friday Traffic Jams, because you know I'll be bringing the music. Hello, somebody. Mm-hmm. So anyway, you guys be sure and come over. If no one's told you they love you today, I do. And you know what? I love to forgive, and I forgive to love, because I am. So be it. Thank you. Have a good week. See you Friday at 6 for Friday Traffic Jams.
Over, saying all we need. possibilities in the moves we can make. Your kiss is giving every indication. If this heart of mine is right, by the time this night is over, the stars are gonna shine with two lovers in love. And when the morning comes, it's gonna find us and love take us over. There's magic here with you and I, and it's gonna take us all the way. Let's find some kind of deeper conversation. Darling, if it's right, by the time this night is over, the stars are gonna shine on two lovers in love. And when the morning comes, it's gonna find us together in a love.